Well, you probably heard the expression, the saying, desperate times call for desperate measures. Well, apparently that expression originated with a saying from an ancient Greek physician named Hippocrates. And he said, for extreme diseases, extreme methods of cure are most suitable. So I want to talk about desperate times today, and it's not hard to imagine desperate times because we're in desperate times. Just think about what's been in the news this week about the baby formula shortage. It may not touch you, but it's touching many, many people right now. It's a nightmare no parent would ever want to face. It's a problem, particularly for parents of small children who have medical problems and need specialized formula that's very difficult to find. Dr. Jack Maypole is a pediatrician at Boston Medical Center. He said those families can be really at sea right now, really actually desperate to reestablish nutritional support for their children. He said, I'm really worried about them. I don't know if you saw it, but I read that some Walmart stores actually are putting the baby formula in locked cases. And when someone comes to buy it, they open the case and then they escort them to the checkout. I even read about some areas where it's very scarce that mothers are going onto Facebook and pleading with people, please, if you have some formula, would you share some just even for a few days? Desperate times call for desperate measures. Think about the housing shortage right now. That's another example. Glenn Kelman is the chief executive of Redfin. He talked about some of his observations. He's a real estate brokerage guy. And he said inventory is down 37% year over year to a record low. The typical home sells in 17 days, a record low. Prices are up a record amount, 24% year over year, a record high. Homes still sell on average for 1.7 higher than the asking price, another record. And so he gave an example of how desperate people are becoming to purchase a home. He described a Bethesda, Maryland home buyer who included in her written offer a pledge to name her firstborn child after the seller if they would sell to her. That's how desperate people are becoming. Still didn't get the house. Desperate times call for desperate measures. I think it's interesting to think about that expression was born out of the arena of healing, the arena of being cured and finding health. Desperate times of sickness. Desperate times of brokenness. It calls for measures that are desperate. And we're going to meet a woman today who was desperate for physical healing. She utterly desperate for Jesus to touch her. Her story is found in Mark chapter 5, 21 through 34. You can turn there. And as you're doing, I want to just give you a little bit of background. We're in the Gospel of Mark, and we've been there for a while. And here's the scene for those of you who haven't been along for the journey. Jesus has been on the east side of the Sea of Galilee. He's rejected there. There was something about a herd of pigs that were drowned, if you were with us. And so they all sent him away. He got in a boat with his disciples and crossed back over to the west side of the Sea of Galilee. And when he arrived there, a large crowd of people enthusiastically welcomed him. They were so excited, waiting for him, anticipating him to return. And there was one particular man among the crowd. His name was Jairus. He was a Jew, actually a synagogue ruler. And he had a desperate need. If you've had a child that had a very serious illness, you can relate to his desperation. His 12-year-old daughter was dying. So even though he knew that many of the Jews, especially religious leaders, hated Jesus, he went to that reception of Jesus as he got out of the boat, and he went and approached Jesus, and he got on his knees, and he pleaded with him to come and touch my daughter and heal her. And much to his delight, I'm sure, Jesus agreed, and he went with him. So here's the scene. There's a massive crowd of people. It says a huge crowd followed and pressed around him. So all of these people are pressing in on Jesus. They're going with Jesus and Jairus toward Jairus' home. And like open-beaked baby birds, all the people are there, hungry for a miracle. They believe Jesus is going to do another miracle. He's going to heal. So they're all following, jostling for position, moving along. This desperate man, Jairus, is excited that Jesus is going with him. But then they were interrupted. They were interrupted on the way by another desperate situation. Right in the middle of all the mayhem, a nameless woman approached Jesus. Came up, basically in a very secretive way, very discreet way, and touched him. She just had to get near him. And I can only imagine, as Jesus began to address her, how frustrated Jairus must have been. We don't know who this woman was. All we know is this. She was a woman who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. That's all Mark says. We've all been there, right? When sickness, trials, troubles, they come. They come to all of us, but what's very difficult is when they just don't seem to go away. Imagine 12 years. 12 years. 144 months. Some of you, like me, you had COVID maybe a year ago when it was seemed to be much more serious before the vaccinations and so forth. It's about 15 months since I was tested positive for COVID and got quite sick, and I'm still not over it. I'm not over all of it, and some of you are still dealing with some of the long-term effects of COVID. That's 15 months. Imagine 12 years of dealing with this. That's what she's been going through. Now, Mark doesn't label her illness. There's not a label on it. Probably didn't have one at that time. It would appear, it seems, as though it's some kind of a female issue, probably ovarian tumors or cysts or something of that nature, causing her to be in this perpetual state of bleeding. Not an easy thing to deal with going forward. I remember when Teresa was younger, when we were first married, she was diagnosed with endometriosis. Some of you have had it, I imagine. Many of you probably know what it is. It was not a pleasant experience for her. It was absolutely miserable. For years, she struggled with that. Then that's why she actually had a hysterectomy when she was 27 years old, because of how difficult it was. And this woman has been dealing with issues like this for 12 years. She's desperate. And Mark sandwiches these two stories together to teach us a lesson. So today what we're going to do is we're going to zero in on this woman, and next week we'll pick up as we come to the other part of the sandwich, the return to the story about Jairus. Well, let's think about this woman. Why is she still suffering after 12 years? Well, it wasn't because she didn't seek help. It wasn't because she didn't try. In fact, Mark says she had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet, instead of getting better, she grew worse. I guess some things never change. Many doctors, I can relate to that. Teresa and I can relate to that. I was thinking about it, and I wrote it down. I better look so I won't forget. This is the menu of doctors that Teresa and I now currently see. A cardiologist, both of us, pulmonologist, hematologist, oncologist, a dermatologist, a rheumatologist, did I say? Yeah, I said a pulmonary doctor, and a regular PCP. So she would see many doctors. And think of all the trauma that caused her. Think, if you've ever taken radiation or chemotherapy, you know that sometimes the cure is worse than the disease. And I suspect that may have been the case for her in some ways. Because when you look into the primitive medicine at that time and what it meant to go and receive treatment from a doctor, it doesn't sound very good. Let me give you an example from the Talmud. These are some of the cures that she likely was under in the care of these doctors. One remedy consisted of drinking a goblet of wine containing a powder compounded with rubber, alum, and garden crocuses. Sounds good. Another treatment consisted of a dose of Persian onions cooked in wine, administered with the summons, "Arise out from your flow of blood." Other physicians prescribe sudden shock or the carrying of the ash of an ostrich's egg in a certain cloth. It sounds more like a cure for hiccups than the flow of blood. So do you get a little bit of a sense of how desperate this woman was? She'd tried everything and nothing was working. In fact, she was getting worse. So she's physically suffering. I don't know. I can only assume there's some anemia, weakness. Chronic illness does wear you down, right? So she's dealing with the physical problems, but that's not all. There's also the emotional issues wrapped around it. If you've been sick for a long time, you know how there can be a roller coaster. Seems like you're getting better. Maybe there's a new drug, a different doctor, and you have hope. Maybe this is going to be the ticket. This is going to work, only to try it and then be dashed again in your hopes. And it's this emotional roller coaster of hope and then loss of hope. And she's been on this roller coaster for 12 years. But of course, there's more than that. There's the financial dimension. Mark said she spent all she had. She's bankrupt. She's destitute. She's desperate. I was thinking about some of my own medical expenses over the years. It's 19 years now since I had heart bypass surgery, 2003. And I think the total outlay, the total cost at that time is probably double now, I would guess. I don't know, maybe more. But at that time, it was in excess of $115,000. So thank God for health insurance. Thank God for generous family members who covered that so we weren't saddled with a debt. We were not left spending all we had, but she was. So this is what she's dealing with. But there's even more. I want you to understand. You need to understand that there's more to it than this. There's also a social dimension to her suffering. Because according to the law of Moses, this woman is perpetually, ceremonially unclean. She's unclean perpetually. Everyone she touches, everything she touches, anyone who touches her is unclean. And in that particular culture, especially in that culture, much of life revolved around the home, and particularly around the religious festivals and celebrations in the synagogue. And she's been banned from all of that because of her uncleanness. She's apart from her family, apart from her religious community. She's completely isolated, forsaken for all practical purposes. She's little better than a leper. So now you're beginning to understand the desperation of this woman who had this issue of blood for 12 years. When our daughters were little, Nicole and Emily, I don't know how it started. Teresa and I should probably figure that out. I don't know if it really matters. But somehow they began to refer to a boo-boo. We saw on the screen this morning, and a lot of people called that. It wasn't a boo-boo in our house. You know what it was? It was a bleed. No matter what happened, whether blood was involved or not, if something happened and you got hurt, it was a bleed. Someone got a bleed. So Teresa's kind of getting mad at me because I still talk about everything being a bleed. I said, my arthritis is flaring up. I've got a bleed in my wrist. She doesn't like it. I told some of you the story of Emily, our youngest daughter, when she was probably about 5. We had a friend who was dating a guy who was not a Christian, and we talked to her, talked to them. We prayed for Steve, that he would come to Christ and all that that meant and so forth. And once we were with Steve, and our young daughter Emily, as children are prone to do, began to talk to Steve very openly about his need for Jesus. And she said, oh, Steve, you have to love Jesus. You have to love Jesus. If you don't love Jesus, you're going to go to that icky place, and you'll get bleeds there. Now, bless her heart. You know, she was very, very serious and very sincere. And although I was cringing a little bit, on the other hand, I was just praying, Holy Spirit, you just use what she says and what she said. And I think he did. Because as I said, Steve later came to Christ. So the question today is, do you have a bleed? Is there some issue in your life today, as Tim mentioned a few moments ago, that you brought into this room with you, that you brought on to the service online with you? What we're going to see is desperation is a motivator. And desperation motivated her to do something rather dramatic. And I hope that whatever you're facing today, whatever kind of bleed you may be experiencing, that you'll too come to Jesus and allow him to touch you, whatever it is. Well, because she was so desperate, she took desperate measures. So Mark said, when she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak. Because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I'll be healed. That was tremendous courage that she demonstrated there. I mean, if you think about her social dilemma and the crowd, this was tremendously courageous of her to do this, because the way Mark describes it, actually, they were being crushed. Jesus was almost being crushed by the crowd around him. He said people were crowding against him. The terminology is the same terminology used for crushing grapes in the winemaking process. I was thinking about that. Can you remember back to getting on an elevator pre-COVID, before social distancing? I mean, now if there's 2 people on there, everybody's like, whoa, I'm not getting on. But remember back in the day when that wasn't the case? You get on, and then a few more get on, and a few more, and it's getting kind of full. And you're thinking, oh, goodness, I hope nobody else gets on. And then a few more, and you're thinking, finally, and the door begins to close, and then there's this hand that goes in. And then 3 more people come, and somebody in the front says, oh, yeah, there's tons of room. Come on in. And you're all in the back like, please, Lord, get me through. You know, everybody's pressed against you. That's essentially what it was like for Jesus. The people are all around him, pressing in on him. Now, this woman, she's heard about Jesus, so she decided to take some drastic action. So she goes out into that crowd. Now, think of all the mental gymnastics she had to go through to get there to Jesus. All the lies, all the things that she would have had to move past, all the excuses in her mind. I shouldn't be out there. If they find out who I am, I'm going to be in big trouble. He probably can't heal me anyway. I know he healed people. Why would he heal me? And yet all those things, all the fear that she had, she pushed past that because she had faith, somehow, perhaps even mixed with a little superstition, that if she just touched him, he would heal her. So she took that drastic action to move out to him. She risked everything because she heard he had healed people, and she was desperate enough to believe that he might heal her. So I was trying to imagine what it would have been like for her to get closer and closer. And it says that she came up behind him. I'm wondering if she didn't want him to see her. She's behind him, and then she reaches out and touches his garment. So think about that. Just maybe reach to the person next to you. If you're near somebody, just touch their sleeve for a second. Maybe close your eyes and feel the fabric. Yeah, that's what she did. She reached out. She touched his garment. And I was thinking, what did she expect to happen when she did that? Do you think she imagined that something would happen instantly? Or did she think somehow, at some point, hopefully things would change? There's no real indication. But that faith that she had got honored. And we see a drastic deliverance. It says in verse 29, immediately her bleeding stopped. Immediately it stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. Can you imagine? At that moment, no more medicine, no more incantations, no more doctors, no more recovery even. It's instantly changed. Right then, Jesus did in one moment, one touch, what no doctor, no medicine could do for a dozen years. And that's what Jesus can do for you and for me today. He did it instantly. Mark says she was healed from her suffering. And in case you doubt how extreme it was for her, the term he uses for suffering here is a term that really referred to a whip or a scourge. You maybe haven't done this. It was a guy thing back when I was a young person, mostly in the men's locker room and maybe a few other places. We would get a towel and get it all wet, roll it up, and go like that. Snap somebody with a towel. Anybody ever do that? Yeah. That really hurts. Yeah. It leaves a welt. Well, you know what? A whip is much worse. And a scourge is worse still. And Mark says, as he's describing her experience, she was relieved from her beating. For 12 years, this sickness has been beating her physically, emotionally, spiritually, financially. Every day she wakes up and feels the sting of this scourge that she cannot be rid of. And now he said, immediately it stopped. She was freed from her suffering. I wonder what she felt in her body. You ever think about that? How did she know at that moment? Don't really know. But as I mentioned earlier, I can only presume that she had some measure of anemia and weakness and fatigue. That's one of my biggest battles in my long recovery from COVID is fatigue. Fatigue is different from being tired. Being tired is when you work hard and you're tired. Fatigue is you just always feel no energy. You wake up in the morning and you're like, ugh. It's like I slept well, but I don't feel any rest. And I suspect she had a measure of fatigue. And perhaps suddenly, it's like when I'm on steroids. I got a shot a few weeks ago. And Teresa's like, I hate your humor when you're on steroids. I'm like, what's wrong with it? And maybe it was like that. It's just a sudden burst of energy. And I, again, don't know. Could only guess that she might have some abdominal cramps and issues. And maybe suddenly that's all gone. But whatever it is, she knew suddenly something in her body changed that she was healed. But she isn't the only one that knew something happened. It says that once Jesus realized that power had gone out from him, he turned around in the crowd and asked, who touched me? Now, if you think that's a strange question in light of the context, you wouldn't be alone. Verse 31 says, you see the people crowding against you, his disciples answered, and yet you ask, who touched me? They're like, come on, Jesus, get real here. That's a stupid question. That's essentially what they're saying. Dozens, perhaps hundreds of people have been touching you. How can you even ask such a question? Well, here's the thing. I don't think he was asking out of ignorance. I really don't. God's power is not some impersonal force that just resides within him and it kind of went out. It's personal. It's him. And it goes to us personally. And I believe he knew who she was. He was simply desiring to call her out so that she could receive her full healing and deliverance, not just physical healing. Notice, he kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down at his feet and, trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. Now let's pull back just for a moment and remember, Mark is making a very significant point here in this section. He's helping the reader understand who Jesus is, that Jesus is the sovereign King of all, that he has ultimate sovereign power and authority. First of all, over nature, over the storm with the disciples in the boat. He is sovereign and has power and authority over demons with Legion. He has sovereign power and authority over disease. And as we're going to see next week with Jairus' daughter, spoiler alert, the daughter died. But he raised her from the dead. And Mark is saying, that's who you're worshiping, Jesus, the King. There is no one like him. He has all power and authority. Mark gives these examples and what happens in each case. Go back to the disciples in the boat. What happened when they knew Jesus? But when they saw what he did, what did they do? They were terrified and they said, who is this? What did Legion do when Jesus got off the boat? He ran to him and he what? Fell on his knees. Jairus, when Jesus came, he ran out to meet him as he got off the boat. He fell on his knees. This nameless woman, when Jesus calls her, comes running, trembling, and falls on her knees before him. My friends, that's who we worship. One who is so far above anything we can imagine. His authority and power over every situation that you're facing. He's the King. He's in charge of your life. He's in charge of your family. He's in charge of the world. And he deserves our worship. And we ought to be awestruck as we come into his presence. They were. So what did she do as she's there trembling on her knees in front of him? Mark says she told him the whole truth. 12 years of agony, of misery, of desperation, of pain and disappointment and rejection. 12 years of it just comes vomiting out of her to Jesus. The desire that he might touch her, the reason she came that day, it all comes pouring out. And then it's at that point that she receives her full healing. He said to her, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. Did you hear what he called her? What did he call her? Daughter. If not the only time, one of the only times Jesus referred to a female as daughter. So what's he saying? He's saying you've not only been restored back to the community, you're no longer unclean. You have been restored in your relationship to God. You are a child of God. Your faith has saved you. And Mark, to make this unmistakably clear, he changed terms. Earlier he said, you're healed, and he used a term that's generally used to refer to physical healing. Here in this verse, he uses the term sozo, which means to save, which is generally associated with faith and salvation. Clearly, he's communicating to her that her belief in Jesus has not just made her well physically, but spiritually as well. John MacArthur observes, Jesus healed many people who did not exhibit genuine faith and thus were made well only in a physical sense. There were also those who expressed saving faith in him. In such cases, their bodies were not only delivered, but also their souls. Jesus' response to this woman, connecting the word sozo with her faith, suggests that she was healed of more than just physical affliction. Because she had been saved, she could now truly go in peace. Desperate times call for desperate measures. And she was desperate. And she went to the right place, to the right person. She went to Jesus. And he touched her. And he changed her forever. You know, one of the things I think that emerges from this account, I alluded to it earlier, and it's this. Desperation is often a prelude to grace. Desperation is often a prelude to grace, to God's touch. As long as I can handle it, as I go, I can manage my pain, then how can God grant his grace to me? It's when I say, God, I need you, that his grace comes flowing into our lives. You know, the Bible's full of desperate people. I talked about a few here. Legion, remember how desperate he was? No one could even chain him and hold him. And Jairus is certainly desperate. As I said, there's nothing worse than a child who's seriously ill. There's no cure. This woman was very desperate. King David was desperate, among many others. He said this, "Listen to my cry, for I am in desperate need." I wonder today if that could be your cry this morning for some need in your life. It might be emotional need. It might be some sadness, some grief, some pain. You know, Mother's Day for many is such a wonderful day, a great day to honor mothers and children. But let's be honest, for countless numbers of women, it's the worst day of the year. And maybe today you're just like, Lord, come, give me your grace for this day. The pain of the loss, whatever that might look like. Or maybe it's something entirely different than what this day brings. The fact is, we all face adversity, right? I mean, we do. It's part of the condition in this lost, broken, bent world. Parenting brings its share of challenges. Maybe you have a parenting burden. There's a desperation for a child, desperation for one of your children that's in a place, state, that is becoming desperate. Maybe it's a financial adversity, and it's becoming desperate as the account dwindles and the income is not meeting the need. It could be a relational adversity. There are challenges that come along with that. It could be anything, but here's the deal. Some adversity is small, you know. It's like an inconvenient headache or something like that, some minor conflict with someone. But some adversity is huge. Like a rebellious child. Like a serious, perhaps even a terminal illness. Like the loss of someone you love. Desperation that's within us for help, regardless if the need is small or great, can put us in a position to receive the grace of God. So here's the final word. As Jesus was traveling, Jairus in the crowd, the woman wouldn't let him pass. She She wouldn't be denied. So she made her way to Jesus. She reached out and touched him. So I just simply say to you today, if there's some need, whether it's great or small, that's all for someone else to determine. The need, if it's there, don't let Jesus pass you by today. Just reach out and touch him. Believe that he can touch you and help you today.